down in Shoals. I hope we can recreate the same feeling of spontaneity. Ask anything you like. I'll try to give the straightest answer I can. Maybe to provide a few facts that folks didn't know that I'm lucky enough to know now by virtue of this job. But I really want to thank the sponsors, IBC and 8, and all the other stations around the state for helping us to do this exercise in democracy and citizenship. You know, we got a lot to talk about as the citizens of Indiana this year. Probably been more change in the year 2005 than in a long, long time. And there are going to be more to come. At least some of us believe much more is needed. And we've put this state on a track quicker than most folks thought was possible to a balanced budget for the first time in a decade. Wasn't easy. There were some tough decisions, and nobody likes those, but some thought they were necessary.
Well, let's talk about some of those decisions then. Steve has the first question.
That's right. Your name and your question for the governor.
My name is Ramon Eulacio. I'm from Venezuela. My question is, diversity is so important for Indiana. I would like to know, what are your plans to attract and retain talent to Indiana?
Mucho gusto, señor. Prefiero que yo responda en español o inglés. Let's try English for the benefit of everybody. But anyway, welcome to our country. How many years have you been with us?
1.5.
We're very glad you're here. You know, Indiana has an awful lot of new citizens, and I hope it's always true. You know, this country's always been a place people wanted to get into, not get out of. And the day when people from other places with dreams and hopes who want to work hard and do right by their families stop wanting to come to the United States, that's when we got a problem. So I think we should welcome the new diversity. It brings problems. I say many times in their native language, if they are from nations to the south, to folks who have come here, I think there's a simple three-part contract. If you're prepared, first of all, to obey the law and be a good citizen. Secondly, to work very hard and contribute to the economy of this country and give back. And third, to learn English and see that your children learn English, the language of this country. I think anybody who's prepared to do those three things ought to be welcome here. And we need to celebrate the diversity that we have, insist on that simple three-part contract, but realize that we'll be a stronger state, as we've always been a stronger nation, if we are welcoming to people who want to come here to the melting pot and embrace freedom and the qualities we call Americanism.
Interesting to hear the Spanish. I've heard you do that before. Your Spanish is better than my English sometimes. So on to our next question now, Dave Quigley from Tipton. If you would give us an idea of your question, please.
It's regards economic development in the local counties. Governor, thank you for the opportunity to ask the question. 17 or so years ago, the legislature passed the economic development income tax where county councils could pass the tax. The statute then defined what the use of that money was for. Since that time, that money has been used for many purposes which, in my opinion, do not fit within the definition of the statute. The legislature then added to the statute a provision that could be used for any purpose any other tax could. So in essence, they created an economic development income tax, which could be called a surplus general fund tax or a surplus transportation tax or whatever. I brought a copy of the statute that perhaps you could bring or take to your staff and
look at. I might read it off the air, but
I understand.
I promise to read it.
I understand. And I've addressed this with legislators. And I've addressed it with Mr. Maurer. And so now I'm going to address it with you and ask if you would work to see that the economic development income tax monies are used for economic development income tax or development.
Well, Dave, maybe. But and let me say, I understand the thrust of your question. And yet I think I may have a slightly different view. This doesn't for a moment diminish the importance of economic development. It's the number one reason I ran for public office in the first place, something I never really expected to do in my life. I was eventually frustrated watching young people leave this state, not because they don't love it here, not because they don't think this would be a great place to live, but because they just weren't sure that it had enough economic opportunity for them to realize their own dreams. But I will say this, I believe that this is a time when we should be offering more flexibility to local government in Indiana, local schools for that matter. And I'm very interested in seeing us balance the local tax burden, I think, more fairly than today. We lean so heavily on the property tax today that I would rather give localities the opportunity not to spend more money, which has been a problem. The biggest problem we have in local taxation is too much spending. And the dollar you don't spend is one you never have to tax anybody for from any source. But I do believe it's a good idea to offer more home rule and local autonomy in Indiana and hold local officials accountable. If they don't do enough about economic development, voters will notice it and can deal with them accordingly.
All right. Thank you very much, Governor.
Thank you for your question.
We can now go to Monument Circle. Eric Berman from WIBC is there with a guest who has a question for the governor.
Thank you, Eric. Joyce Alexander from Franklin is with me. And Joyce, what is your question?
Well, my question for you, Governor Daniels, I ask if it's a wise expenditure of $26.5 million annually on the I-STEP testing to only move ahead 1 or 2% each year in learning ability. Aren't we shortchanging our students and our teachers to be focused so on teaching this test when we look at the top Indiana schools who score 80 to 100% on the I-STEP test? We find that they are largely parochial and private schools. What are we missing here? Are you familiar with Marva Collins of Chicago, who went to public schools in Chicago after she had been a successful teacher in her own private school for 21 years?
Joyce, your question?
My question is, could we hire her knowledge for this kind of money? And could we not benefit from her knowledge and benefit our teachers who would feel like they weren't testing to the test all the time and they were really educating our children in a higher level and expecting much more out of them?
Well, thank you, Joyce. It's an excellent question. It's one I get from time to time in meetings like this. First of all, I'm very familiar with Marva Collins. She worked a miracle in Chicago, and she proved that great education and great results can happen anywhere, even in places that don't have a lot of money and don't have the advantages that many communities enjoy. But let me say that we need testing, in my opinion. I think the I-STEP test, and I've often said it, could be simpler, probably could be less expensive. But I don't think there can be any retreat from accountability in education. And Sue Ellen Reed, our superintendent, and many people who've worked with her have done, I think, a really good job. This is before I got here, of building a set of standards and tests to see if kids are meeting those standards. That's very important to moving forward. You know, I always said in business, if you're not keeping score, you're just practicing. And we need to know, we really do, which kids are making it. And which kids are not, so we can help them while there's still time. We need to know what schools are doing a great job so we can imitate them, and what schools are not doing a good job so we can rush and help them in the interest of our kids. So a streamlined I-STEP, yes, I think so. We should always look to do these things as affordably as possible. But in all honesty, Joyce, I believe we've got to know which kids are doing well, which aren't, and then take the steps necessary to help those in need.
Okay, we may have a trick question, maybe something you've anticipated coming from WSBT in South Bend.
I wanted to talk to the guy in the Harley shirt. Yeah. Hold that thought.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Could be about bikes.
Go ahead, South Bend.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. I'm going to guess that the governor might have anticipated this one. Governor, as you might expect from this part of the state, we have a time zone question for you.
With
me is John Gaske. Oh, yes, Governor, is John Gaske. He is a professor of marketing at Notre Dame, and John has been an outspoken advocate of Central Time for this part of the state and spoke eloquently on that issue at the time zone hearing up there. So go ahead, John, ask the question directly to the governor.
That's so funny, Governor. Is the governor laughing?
Yes, he is.
No, I'm smiling because John, I actually know John through email, and he is a very effective advocate for his point of view.
Likewise, Governor, and I appreciate this event so much that I have a mild question for you on time zone. In your letter to the DOT, you asked that St. Joe County's petition for Central Time be rejected so that there would be unity with Elkhart County in the region. If unity for these two counties could be achieved on Central Time, would you be satisfied? In other words, could you support a Central Time-based solution as well as an Eastern Time one?
Yes, John, I absolutely could. I I think I've been 100% consistent on this whole subject. My view, and in fact, in the roadmap that we formulated, traveling this state for close to 2 years, and our proposal for moving Indiana forward, the position that I took was, in the interest of our economy and jobs, to eliminate confusion among our customers in what is now a global marketplace, Indiana should be on daylight saving time. And secondly, I said, if we could ever achieve that, it'd be a good idea to see if we could get as much of the state as possible on one time. I didn't say which time, although when folks said, what about central time, I said I could see a very good argument for it. And I could certainly see it where you live, Professor. We didn't have unity of viewpoint up there, and much of the area that relates to South Bend economically and socially says they want, for the moment at least, to stay on Eastern time. And the one thing I heard consistently from folks up there was, whichever way we go, don't draw a line right down the middle. Don't split us up. But no, if you know, any county in America can appeal any time it wants to change time zones. And if opinion should shift, and if folks up there said, hey, let's all go central, I would support that.
Now, is there a follow-up? Go ahead.
I just want to say, Governor, I really appreciate your at least conditional endorsement of central time for St. Joe County. Well, thank you very much.
John, thank you. Keep going, John,
and if you convince your friends and neighbors in that area, I'd be the first one to back you up.
Well, let me follow up on that a little bit if I can, just because there are people who still think that you had endorsed central time. If you can clarify, you would address that in the answer, but just for clarification.
Well, I think I've said it as clearly as I can, Eric, but as I say, we only gave out about a million of those. You won't find the word central in there anywhere. You know, what I used to say when I was being a wise guy about this was it could be Hawaiian time as far as I was concerned if we could all get together. The fact is we can't get everybody together in the state. We're going to, if the DOT were to take the suggestions that I mailed to them, we would move up to something like 81% or 82% of all Hoosiers on one time. It just happens that would be Eastern.
Okay. Now to the man in the Harley shirt.
The guy in the Harley shirt. Your name and your question for the governor.
My name's Tim Kilborn. I live in Decatur Township.
Yes, sir.
I kind of had three questions, but I got two that's probably pretty important. The first being work comp laws. Indiana work comp laws are failing to protect the workers of Indiana. Been through it. I worked at Stoops Freightliner for 10 years, got hurt on the job, and they sent me to a butcher. I had absolutely no choice in which doctor I went to. I was subsequently made disabled by this doctor and was fired from my disabilities. Mm-hmm. The other question that I had is, in Decatur Township, you just came out and had a grand opening for that blood testing center there in the Mariplex.
Yes.
I live down the street from that. In fact, I live in the middle of that industrial park. We've just had Katrina down south tear up a neighborhood. We've had a tornado south of Indiana tear up a neighborhood. We've been under attack for 10 years from this industrial park. They are now going to the state legislature and trying to pass a law on their I-70 project to try to do to grab the sales tax in that area.
What's your question?
My question is, we need help. Can you come out there and help us repair our neighborhoods? We just want to move and be able to get out of the way, and our local government has done nothing so far.
Well, we'll sure take a look, Tim. First of all, I'm very sorry about the experience you had on workers' comp. It's a very important program, and we'll always be open to improvements in it. I hope that, by the way, that there was some sanction, if the facts are as you said, on the doctor who apparently made mistakes in your case. Yes, I remember the industrial park. I was there for what I think was a happy occasion. This was the opening of the kind of business Indiana really does need, a high-tech with high-paying jobs, a business that's likely to grow a lot. I've made a note about what you said. We'll have some folks come out and have a look. While I was there, no one brought up problems that it might be causing for the surrounding neighborhood, but we always want neighbors of our economic growth accommodated where we can.
Our next question, Governor, comes from WLFI. Gina Quattrochi in Lafayette has that question for us. Gina. Okay,
needs Fuller is service coordinator. Melissa, what's your question for the governor?
With the upcoming budget cuts, how will the budget cuts affect the funding to the First Steps program and the services that children receive?
Well, the First Steps program was treated no differently than many other things. We did have to stand still in spending. Only four spending categories went up in what was the leanest budget in our state in about a half a century. Schools, Medicaid, support to local government, and child protection. Those four categories went up, most of them modestly, and everything else we tried to stand still on. The First Steps program did need some reform. There have been some abuse in the program. There's been, I'm sad to say, some folks take advantage of it. But in general, it's a great program. We're going to sustain it. We're going to try to clean up any problems, but we're certainly eager to see it remain and continue helping needy kids at the earliest years of life.
Okay. This is kind of along the lines of what Tim was asking, and Julietta Wagner, if you would, please join us for just a minute. We thank you for joining us, and your question is?
What has to be done if the employer or the work compensation has been denied? And let's say it's been appealed, but since the employer is trying to get around from not being able to pay, and they keep, you know, it's just like a battle between the employer and the workforce. So I was in the middle of something there, and so the question is, if there's like an argument, like who's gonna be, you know, like they're denying.
Help for unemployment.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Well, Julietta, was this a private employer, and was it your situation? All right. Well, I'd be happy to maybe talk to you off the air about it. You know, obviously there's always legal recourse if an abuse was severe enough. In state government, we have a grievance procedure and a series of steps an employee can take if they feel they've not been treated fairly, something like that may or may not have been available to you, but there are legal steps, and you know, we want everybody's rights protected the extent the law permits it. Yes, thank you.
Next question from WSBT up in South Bend again.
All right, Eric, thank you again very much. And Governor, our next question is from Al Brasser. He is from South Bend. He's in the business of money management. And so, not surprisingly, he has a question about money in the state of Indiana. Al, go ahead and ask the governor.
Well, if the state of Indiana is so cash-starved, and it's been that way for a while, especially for highway projects that are thinking of leasing the toll road, why shouldn't the state consider adding tolls to other interstates in the state? Like 465 around Indianapolis could raise a lot of money. Can residents...
No, he wants you to answer that question if you could, Governor.
Okay, well, thank you, Al. It's a very good question. It points up a couple of very fundamental facts of life in our state. One was that our state government, by any fair description, has been bankrupt for a while. And it's our duty to fix that. But the good news is we're well underway. And I believe well within this two-year budget cycle we'll be at balance. And that's important so that we can begin planning for a future. We've got investments we want to make in education and transportation and other things. But the first step is to get out of the hole. And I want to thank everybody who has voted for or supported policies that will help us do that. And especially I want to thank our new crew of managers in state government who have saved over $200 million already just by being more careful in what we buy, how we buy it, how we run the place. Now, in transportation, we've got a very fundamental problem. We have, on the books, on the drawing boards, $2 worth of roads and bridges and transportation projects for every $1 that we'll have coming from all available sources. And this problem has sat there for many, many years. All over in Indiana tonight, there are people who believe they got a local road or some other important project to their local economy that somebody's planning to build, and there's not a prospect to build them, more than half of them. That's why we propose what we call the Major Moves Project. It includes a number of things. Keeping with Al's point, I've suggested if we're going to build, as we should, the rest of I-69 to connect all of Indiana to the markets of the southern United States and beyond. The only way I can see to do that, as expensive as it is to partially defray its cost through tolls. Please note that two-thirds of the tolls on the toll road we have today are paid by out-of-state traffic. I talked about Al talked about a possible lease of the toll road. We have asked the marketplace, is anybody interested in this? We have people right now run hospitals for us. We have them run many of our office buildings. We have them run one of our prisons. The question is, anybody want to run this road? If they do, and if they offer us, as they might, a very large amount of money for that, we could use it to close this gap. There is no step that government in Indiana could take that would build more jobs in this state for the next generation than to spend an extra couple billion dollars. We call ourselves the Crossroads of America for a reason. And if you're the crossroads, you better have the best possible means of getting goods and services in and out and through your state. And we have that within our power. But we will have to depart from business as usual, try a couple of the new things. And I thank Al for a question that really goes to the heart of the biggest opportunity I think we've got.
Okay, now to the heart of the city, WIBC has a question in Monument Circle.
Okay, Eric, we are here with Sheila Morrison from Rochdale, and you have a question on the nature of the office.
Yes, the people of Indiana elect our legislators to carry out our wishes. I don't think in the last session that they were able to do that effectively due to the heavy influence from your office. Some might say that the checks and balances prescribed in the Indiana Constitution have been impeded. Do you think the checks and balances are still intact?
Oh, Sheila, they're very intact. Let me just say that we've got a very active legislature. Members of both parties assert their privileges as they should. They're very aggressive. They have ideas of their own. They challenge ours as they should. And many of the programs that we took to our fellow citizens in competing for the chance to serve our state were improved and amended because of the vigor of our legislative partners. But let me say this. I make no apology for it. I only ran for public office because I want to make Indiana better. I believe in this state, and those who helped us do this believe in this state enough to believe we can be better than we are, that our potential exceeds our recent performance. And not everybody has chosen to do this, but we ran on a very explicit program. We laid before our fellow citizens, depending how you count it, 70-odd ideas for how we might improve life in Indiana. And I feel duty-bound to pursue those. It was not mere campaign chatter to me to be tossed aside afterward. I feel honor-bound to try to see those into practice, and we got a high percentage of them done. But I respect the difference between the branches. I respect the prerogatives of the legislative branch. I'm learning as I go. I'll try to improve on my mistakes, and I made plenty in the first session. But I will say that if I come to the conclusion and I say to you as my fellow citizens that we should double our investment in highways and transportation, for instance, then I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to do my very best to persuade the legislature to come along.
Steve?
Got another question for you. Your name, sir, and your question.
My name is Krishnan. My question is, do you have any plan to get rid of poverty, hunger, homelessness in our state?
Homelessness?
Yes, sir.
Well, let me just say that the very...
Poverty also.
Oh, yes. Well, no one can hold the responsibilities that I temporarily do without thinking first about the least fortunate among us. And frankly, I don't know anybody in public life who doesn't feel that way. And the question is how to be most effective. And let me just say, for starters, that the single best anti-poverty program, the single best anti-homelessness program, the single best healthcare program I know is a strong economy. And that's why the bulk of what we've done, the bulk of the program that I was just responding to the lady about had to do with building over the long term a stronger Indiana economy with more opportunity for everybody. Now, there will always be those who struggle, at least for a while, and always those at risk of being left behind. And we're doing all we can to stretch the dollars of state government to help more people than ever before. Take this winter. It could be the toughest winter we've had in terms of natural gas prices. We lost a lot of production in the Gulf, and people are going to get heating bills that are going to be very difficult for some to pay. We've got more money together from public sources. We're going to try to help more people by far than ever have been in our state, and I'm committed to doing that every chance we get. That's why we got the best new crew of people to help us stretch your dollars that probably has ever served Indiana state government.
Well, let me interrupt there because we have a break coming up. We have more questions from here in the studio, more questions from Terre Haute. We'll be back after this break, so please don't go away as we continue our conversation with Governor Mitch Daniels.
This is Bill Estes for Bill Estes Chevrolet. And when we started working with Peyton Manning, I thought, finally, no more of this Cobalt Bill stuff. And then this happened. Peyton, what do you think of when I say Bill Estes?
Cobalt Bill.
No.
Hoo doggy, that's a lot of cobalt.
So here we go again. That's right, partners. It's your old pal, Cobalt Bill, with 104 new cobalts from just 104 a month. And no payments till April. That's right. It's the Hoo Doggy. That's a lot of cobalt sale with 104 cobalt from 104 a month at Cobalt Bill Estes Chevrolet. We got the colors. We got the financing. And Hoo Doggy, we got a lot of cobalts from 104 a month and no payments till April at Cobalt Bill Estes Chevrolet. I-465 in Michigan Road and BillEstes.com. A better way to drive.
Hoo doggy, that's a lot of cobalts. Please, one time. Just one time for me, please.
Hoo doggy, that's a lot of cobalts.
Huh. I wonder how he liked Cobalt Peyton.
May I help you?
Yeah, it's this cold. My sinuses feel like they're going to explode.
Sudafed P.E.
My allergies have my sinuses all stuffed up.
Sudafed P.E.
Tell the man what's wrong.
My sinuses.
Sudafed P.E.
Sinus misery? The answer is Sudafed P.E. Maximum strength relief of even your worst sinus symptoms without a prescription.
This congestion.
Sudafed P.E.
Sudafed P.E. Maximum strength sinus relief.
WIBC.